Welcome, everybody, and thank you, Arv, for just a lovely guided meditation. So for most of you, you're our usual Sunday morning gang, and I'm so glad to see everybody. And you've known that over these almost 3 years that we've been doing Sunday morning, it's been Tawary, Linda, Lauren, and me, and I just... Over the last weeks, you've been meeting Arv and Susan, and we're all so grateful to have them be part of our team. So thank you, Arv, for that lovely meditation. So we're going to talk about craving this morning. And as we usually do, we either start with a story or a poem. And this morning, we're starting with a poem by David Budbill called This Morning. Oh, this life, the now, this morning, which I can turn into forever by simply loving what is here, is gone by noon. Or we could rewrite it a bit and say, oh, this life, the now, this morning, which I can turn into forever by simply wanting it to stay, is gone by noon. Or we could say, oh, this life, this now, this morning, which I can turn into forever by simply believing that if I had more of it, I would be happy, is gone by noon. So apologies to David Budbill, but I thought the poem was just perfect to talk about tanha, thirst, craving. Anna Lyo, who is one of the really lovely teachers in our tradition and has written some amazing Dharma books, describes tanha as a type of thirst that demands satisfaction and is rooted in dissatisfaction. So I'm going to talk this morning both a little bit about the dissatisfaction and about the demands, that unquenchable thirst. That dissatisfaction, dukkha, the mind state of never enough, life isn't enough, I'm not enough, this moment isn't enough, I don't have enough, love, acceptance, things, whatever, fill in the blank. So it's that dissatisfaction that we learned in the First Noble Truth, the dukkha. Things are never quite up to our expectations, never quite right. And even when they are, they don't last. And in this practice, we are instructed to understand the truth of dukkha, to penetrate that truth with our practice and our conscious awareness, and to deeply accept the truth. But when we deny that basic truth, we find ourselves in argument with life. It's kind of this ever-present refusal to accept things as they are. So this exploration of craving invites us to ask ourselves a whole bunch of questions, and I'm going to have four of them during this talk. The first one is, what's missing in your life? The answers can be pretty interesting, and are they things that actually bring lasting happiness? I ask myself, am I really dissatisfied with life, or am I confusing emotions of grief and loss with dissatisfaction? We know that when we ground our practice in the three characteristics, we can really stay with the reality of life. Life is imperfect, the truth of dukkha. Life is impermanent, anicca. Life is impersonal, anatta. But if we are in denial of these truths, then of course we believe that life is wrong somehow. The Dharma shows us the basic natural lawfulness of the way things are. So second question is, what grounds your practice? During this COVID pandemic, seems to magnify and intensify our dissatisfaction with moment-to-moment experience. What if this continues for the rest of this year, maybe into next year, or even longer? how and where do we find contentment and satisfaction in an ever-changing, unstable world that we're not in control of? So just bringing some of that understanding about where does dissatisfaction live in your mind and heart can be helpful to as we understand craving. Tanha, the Pali word for craving, that unquenchable thirst. We've been exploring the cycle of dependent origination for this whole year and will continue. And part of that is we focus a lot on conditioning. So craving is also conditioned. By the time we first heard the Dharma, we've had so many years of desiring, craving, not getting, being disappointed, getting and having momentary happiness. And then it goes on. And then we find a new thing. And we've never understood in the past what this process was all about. You know, or we get what we want, what we didn't want, and then we can't get rid of it. All these years of conditioning, we've gotten really good at this wanting and craving. As one of the teachers said that I was exploring in preparation for the talk, and I can't remember which one said this, craving is the water we swim in, that water of never-ending desire. So desire is a natural occurrence in just being human, but craving, that demand that desire be met in a certain way. And that craving is also part of this conditioning. There are differences between desire and craving, and of course clinging, which we'll be talking about next month. Desire is, I think, just the simple wanting for the pleasant or pushing away the unpleasant. You know, we've discussed that last month as we were looking at feeling tones. As the desires come up and we just watch them, and we watch them arise and pass away, there's no problem. But craving adds that expectation to the desire, perhaps even attaching the expectation that this, when we fulfill this desire, we're going to be happy. The wanting naturally arises, and if we're okay with just wanting whatever is there, then we're not held in bondage. But if we're pulled and tugged by the disappointment of not getting the result we want, it's a pretty painful place. In Philip Moffat's book, Dancing with Life, which is about the Four Noble Truths, he has some really good insights about the difference of desire and craving. And he also quotes his teacher, Ajahn Sumedho. So I'm just going to share this little excerpt from his book. While all craving has desire in it, not all desire contracts into craving. When it contracts, the mind is caught in the three poisons of greed, hatred, and delusion. What seems to be the actual cause of suffering is the tendency to idealize and identify our desires so much that we become attached to having them fulfilled. Then the result of irritation, frustration, disappointment arise when we don't get what we want. When we cling to desire, we become defined by that desire. We see the world through the eyes of someone who wants the particular goal or outcome. The mind becomes so contracted around what it's craving that it acts as though getting that one thing is going to be just what we need. Mindfulness in our practice teaches us how to see and feel this onslaught and let it pass, using the image that Arv shared of holding that in the container of that big ocean, that it's just a passing desire. That's all it is. And when we use our practice, we aren't so caught in that storm of craving. So there's the conditioning, the identification, the added expectations, and just like the continuum that we talked about with Vedana, there's a continuum of craving from just a hankering to full-blown obsession. Lindell talked about that last week. The desires we're talking about that we call craving seem unquenchable. They demand to be satisfied. It can feel like a black hole, kind of a never-ending pit of craving, demanding. The endless pursuit of the pleasant and the endless pursuit of avoidance of the unpleasant, plus this identifying and attaching our ideas of happiness and attaching our expectations for outcome, that's what creates that sense of this unquenchable thirst, never ending, always re-arising, endless pursuit. And as Lyndall talked about last week, sometimes just the pain of feeling all this wanting is so great that we keep wanting just because that feels better than the pain of really knowing that the wanting. We're like that hamster on the wheel, always looking for the next best thing, leaning forward, that just one more, just if this, then I'll be happy. There are some warnings in the sutta about allowing craving to just follow its natural course. Because if we do that, then the craving becomes stronger. The image that is shared is of a tree that's been cut down, but then it continues to grow because the roots have still been left intact. Those roots of arguing with the state of dukkha, arguing with life, those kinds of roots. Again, you know, in COVID, this whole time, people have been talking about how they feel like they're caged. It's not only because they're sequestered at home, but in that place of kind of isolation, all the wanting and craving for things to be different seems so magnified. And when we're on our cushion, you know, or on our chair and we're in meditation, we bring a commitment to observe all that arises, just like Arv was guiding us this morning, and to refrain from attaching to that insistent one. But then when we do, we might look at the source, like Arv was saying, and then let it go. And so the stronger our practice, the more times we have that experience, it can really help us in our daily lives. But craving is sly and subtle and sneaky. So a caution about sometimes craving arises around our practice itself, where we're encouraged to really notice the difference between just a dharmic aspiration of being filled with wisdom, open-heartedness, and relaxation, versus an insistence that our sits be a certain way. And what happens to us when our entire sit is restless, or we can't let go of any of the fretting, or you go on retreat and the entire retreat you're replaying some event where you were angry or felt mistreated, and then a lot of disappointment and even judgment about your practice, I can't do this, I'm a bad yogi. So remember how, you know, craving can be kind of disguised as maybe our aspiration. It's just important to really look at that. So we've looked at the conditioning, the difference between desire and craving, and that endless pursuit, that insistence that our desires be met. And now let's look at for a minute at what makes us happy. You know, so many of us, probably all of us, have said, I'll be happy once I get X, or if I get rid of Y, or if I find that person who's just going to be my perfect partner, or if I move to the country, or if I live in a new house, or if I get a different job, everything will be fine. And owning up to the truth of getting what we want is not going to make us happy is a pretty important part of this exploration of craving. Whatever it is going to change. It's not going to last. It might start out as pleasant, but just, you know, we'll turn to something different. I practice a lot with the five recollections, which are about owning that aging, illness, and death are, I can't avoid it. It's part of my experience in life. And the fourth recollection says that I will become separate from all that I hold dear. So what if all one of those things that you hold dear, if you hold that to be the source of your well-being, the source of your happiness, what happens when the separation inevitably occurs? So another question, what are your beliefs about what makes you happy? All last month, we just explored Vedana, the feeling tones, and learned that the feeling tones are the first point in this cycle of dependent origination where we have some choice. Pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral arise, and we have the choice to not reach for anything after. It's the first choice point in this cycle. And so as we deepen our understanding of craving, we've got to bring that other understanding and practice of Vedana. They kind of come as a package deal. If we ignore those subtle feeling tones of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, and if we ignore what happens in the mind and body, once we've noticed that and we feel just that little pull or the big pull, what we are going to end up in is that endless pursuit, that unquenchable thirst. One of the teachers that I was looking at, and again, I can't remember who said what, said that the Buddha's instruction to abandon craving and clinging translates into caring without demanding, loving without imposing conditions, and moving toward your goals without attachment to outcome. Ajahn Sumedho says, be in the moment rather than in the outcome of the moment. He continues by saying, if you were fully present to the sacred now, suffering, dukkha, is transformed into joy. The antidote to craving is as simple as this moment is like this and it's okay. So for this coming week, I really encourage you to practice with bringing together the Vedana and the those pulls, those tugs into those insistent thoughts of I've got to have this. This next week, Lauren is going to talk about practice suggestions, and then you can come back with your own stories of what works and what you've learned and what's been hard. And I really encourage you to take that package deal of Vedana and craving into your regular practice. Thank you for your attention.